Yes, I'm ready.
Okay.
All right.
Steve Turnage.
So, greetings. Hi. I feel loud, but that might be because I'm in front of the monitors.
Sweat.
Okay, we're good. We'll let you do it. I started the Mostly Modular Trade Association a few years ago after James called me up. I do circuit board design. I started the drafting department at Rand Corporation in 1986 and then went off to Pavo, which making MIDI tools, and that turned into Digital Harmony, and then that crashed, and then I'm doing my own thing. But one of the rules I wanted for tonight was twice as much playing as talking, so I'm already sort of breaking that. So James called me in 2009 and said, I have these modular rigs, but I really need these specific items. Will you make me one of each to put into my rig? And I said, no, I want to make synthesizers when I grow up. This was what I wanted to do, so we did that. Anything else? It was Saturday, we're going to have SynthFest here all day. There will be a manufacturer's room, a synth petting zoo, modular synth petting zoo. There will be a sponsor area, and this will be sort of lectures all day. I'll let you know what my plans are for this evening, and they're very flexible because just like modular, it can change at any time. First of all, we're going to start with bare metal, and I'm going to say, hey, James, we're going to take this camera and actually go up close to these things so you can see what we're doing instead of having something already set up. And we'll start off with just an oscillator into an amplifier, I think, and see how boring that is.
Let me start with questions, too.
Questions, too, and questions are welcome. This is a group thing, so that'll be fine.
Is there a standard for frames so that somebody else's module will fit
in? I can do a little bit about that. Yeah, you guys can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, basically, back when synthesizers first were modular, there was a handful of manufacturers. They all had different size modules. They all had different cases. They all had different power supplies. They standardized on a control voltage scheme and a gate control scheme. Semi-standardized. The Japanese tended to do volts per hertz, which was a linear thing, and the Americans tended to do a logarithmic volts per octave thing, and so that was a difference. And Moog had a different gate. They had a reverse gate than anyone else, but basically, if you bought into an EMU or bought into an ARC or you bought into a Moog, you basically stayed there because you had this big cabinet you paid for. And you know you couldn't put anybody else's modules in there but Moog's, and so
they did that on purpose.
And they well,
this is pre-MIDI.
I don't think they did it on purpose, but everyone was individual and they were trying to start off a particular revolution that stagnated because of that. You know, and also you have really expensive modules. You know what I mean? I used to sell synthesizers, and I sold the EMU to the University of Washington for $14,000 in 1980, I think it was.
EMU one.
Yeah, it was the big EMU one. Their big Bukla got soaked over a summer. Someone a crack happened in one of the steam radiators in the room. It filled it with steam for a couple of days, and it basically killed it. And it got sold to 9/11, which was a performance space.
To play on that.
Yeah, I remember that. It was a nice day, a voltage controlled tape deck and a bunch of other groovy things. So anyway, so that was a while, and the synthesizer world got dominated by digital synthesizers and that sort of stuff. And then maybe in the late 90s, a company called Dofer, a German company, he decided to make some modules for himself and stuff, and he adopted this particular form factor, which is called Eurorack, and it's based on the Schroff and Proma. It's a technical instrument format, and made for like a test gear primarily, and most of like Vector has their card cages. Well, basically, it's a 3U module, and so this changed everything. Boom! Suddenly, you had like a bunch of people making modules because now they had a universal frame that you could pop it into. And so when I started making modules, there may be like a dozen makers, and now there's over 100. There's like 100, 150 or so. And basically, they are companies that make one or two modules. There's some companies that make a full line. Dofer makes like 100 modules, different modules. AS, which is a British company, Analog Solutions, they make another 100 modules. And they're interchangeable, and like you can see here, there's a bunch of different manufacturers in my rig alone. I mean, here's a local company, Flight of Harmony. There's also a local company, Scott's company, Division 6. I have a couple of Division 6 modules in here. Or where the other one went. Oh, it's in that little bit. And this is an Italian company that makes wave players. This is a company from Texas, WMD. This is another local company,
The Harvestmen.
Yeah, they make the Piston Honda and a few other odd modules. And I don't know what else I have in this. Oh, yeah, this is another company, Kilpatrick Audio. So basically, it's exploded. And it's right now on the Eurorack format. There's maybe four major formats that are competing right now. You have the old school guys who would buy, it's called 5U or Motu or synthesizers.com. They're like the old Moog modulars. Big format, quarter inch jacks, big knobs, all 5U or so high. And then there's another 3U format called the Bug brand or Frac, which has a slightly different spacing on the screws. But basically, Eurorack has taken over because it has the most manufacturers. So you could get into making your own modules, for instance, if you were thinking about that. Almost all the stuff is sold online. There's maybe only a half a dozen stores in the world.
And Mattson Mini Modular.
Oh, Mattson Mini Modular, yeah.
Square.
Which is 3-inch high square modules. He makes very dense, big walls and stuff. The guy from Smashing Pumpkins.
And many of these will be represented on Saturday as well.
Yeah, if you come by on Saturday, you'll see all of them.
So my desire, I'll give you my scratch notes, is first, James Modular from scratch. So we want to make some noises. And then Christian adds KMI control, but I think that's just going to be making a little bit more music. You can show things. Then I was going to add some guitar to show how this could be changing and affecting sounds from the outside world. And then hopefully we're going to jam for a bit. Then I'm going to show a Delptronics YouTube video for a guy that's going to be with us via Skype from Austin on Saturday, and it was very exciting. And then we're going to talk to Daniel Van Chin. It's Dutch.
Dutch, yeah.
Tyne. Daniel Dan Tyne, that's it, via Skype. And that's going to be about in 45 minutes. Then we're going to take a break. Then Greg is going to introduce the old people in the world to glitch rock. Not really.
It's hardly glitch rock.
No. to electronic fabulous things with Ableton Live. And then Lance is going to show us what he does with Reason. So this is going to be sort of out of the box and in the box. In mastering, there's two things called, out of the box and in the box. Out of the box is where you send the audio file out into a rack of stuff and do your stuff there, and it comes back in. In the box is where everything happens inside the computer, and that's what I do. That's what desktop mastering's about. But this is most definitely out of the box. There's also a parallel like that with synthesizers, actual synthesizers that have keyboards and are self-contained. Those are sort of like, I consider them a feminine gender because everything happens inside of them. And these things I see as masculine because they got these pointy bits. And mastering out of the box and in the box is a similar way, and you sort of treat them in that way. So these are rough and tumble. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to say one more thing, is just like sound boils down to frequency and amplitude, modular synthesis boils down to CV and gates. Would you agree?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay.
Well, basically, modular synthesizer, it's like all synthesizers that are around are based on the same idea, which is that you create the sounds electronically and control them electronically. And the difference is that a modular allows you to interchange those duties any way you want. Like, you can use an audio signal as a control signal. You can use a control signal at the right frequencies to be an audio signal. So basically, there's hardly any things that I can plug in to the wrong jack and blow something up. Okay, and that's by design. There are some companies that make stuff that it basically what will typically happen is it will ignore. If you give it a signal it doesn't understand, it just ignores.
The smoke does not come out.
The smoke does not come out.
Yeah, electronics runs on smoke. I'm sure you all know that. When the smoke comes out, the electronics do not run anymore.
Yeah, and that's the companies that don't do that don't last long.
Yeah,
and there's different price ranges for these stuff. If you want, the stuff that you'll be hearing us making out of here is going to be a little less tonal and more abstract. These are, they lend themselves quite a bit to being abstract.
And sound design.
And sound design, yeah. So, and sound modification, which is what I tend to do the most with them, is modify external stuff. If you're a producer or a recordist, this is a good thing to get into for changing stuff that you have that you've taken from other people and other resources.
So what I want to know, we're going to start with sound pressure, making wiggles, voltage-controlled oscillator, oscillates. Can you point me out to where's a VCO that I can point this thing at?
Okay, here's one.
That's a good one? Is that a good one? That's a Piston Honda by Harvestman?
Okay, I have more than one kind of VCO in here.
Okay.
The Piston Honda is a wavetable oscillator. So it has a set of, it's a digital oscillator. It has a set of wavetables of, you can see as I dial up, I have a family wave center, like F. So there's zero to F, so there's that and this many subwaves inside those tables. So let's
do these mean anything here in the middle?
Yeah. one says hither and the other says yon.
Mm-hmm. James, so are those all preloaded from the manufacturer?
Yes. And you can buy an expander unit that you can put in more ROMs. You can also burn your own ROMs if you have the right equipment to do so. It's not usually something that the typical user will do.
What do the jacks do on this one?
Okay, you have the classic inputs are control voltage input that will choose the initial frequency. Basically, all you're doing with all control voltages in here is you're replacing knobs. I mean, you have a knob that you can turn manually, but you also have a control voltage that you can replace that knob with.
How do we know that these are inputs? I'm curious, because it doesn't come with a manual. One thing about the Harvestman, all of these people... It's a community of hermits, just like modular itself. They don't work without being put together.
So you can see I can turn this knob manually.
What's that plugged into?
It's just plugged straight out.
Straight into the mixer?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is raw.
Yeah. And these are different wave. Here, let me get down to those.
And so this is the output. The way you find this stuff out is you just plug into it and see what happens?
Well, you
usually?
No, you choose the different, you learn the module.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, because there's no manual with Harvestman modules.
So you can see he has a set of semi-abrasive sounds. So, for instance, I'm turning these knobs. Well, there's also a control voltage input to turn the knob for me. You know, so I can have it walk through wavetables. You know, I can have a preset.
With a low-frequency oscillator, perhaps?
You could use a low-frequency
oscillator. You want to do that? Hit one of those up. Where's your LFO?
Let me find one here.
See, we're going to try and play twice as much
as
we're talking.
He's going to be doing this all night long here.
Yeah, I'm so. Okay, so look, you're going to go into... Let's look at the LFO just for a second. Is that...
Okay, this is your classic LFO, which has...
This
is a Dofer. It's a Volt. Dofer makes a lot of very utilitarian modules, and they're fairly cheap. So this is an easy one for that. It has four different waveforms, the classic waveforms that are both audio and control voltage waveforms, which is a triangle wave, a sine wave, a square wave, and a ramp wave or sawtooth. It's also referred. So I'm taking the sine wave, which you can see here, and you can see what it's doing here. It's causing...
So let's hear that. He was saying he's going to make more noise than anything.
Is that the same knob?
No, the knob is on top of it. Yeah, I can change it. Yes, there's a control. Almost all control voltage inputs have a attenuator built into them so that you can scale your control voltage to do a small subset of the range that the control voltage has. There's also almost always, like for instance, you'll see this one up here, doesn't have a knob associated with it. And that's
because there's no line.
Yeah, there's no line to a knob. So that's a fixed at a volt per octave.
And that goes into it? That's an input?
That's a control voltage for the this oscillator section.
So that's an oscillator session. What are these three things?
Coarse, fine, and control voltage range.
Coarse.
So you turn the knob that you've got the CV input.
This one here.
But does the knob, which one takes precedence?
It adds to it.
They're both summed together. So if you have like an LFO that's doing this, by turning the knob, I can move it up to here to do that up here.
So it's a center.
Down to here.
So the knob offsets
yeah.
the...
Yeah. Or if I have that control voltage input all the way up, it's going to do this no matter what I do with the knob.
So if the CV is going from 0 to 10 volts and you have the knob turned all the way down...
You're done. It's 0 to 10 volts.
Yes.
And if you turn it all the way up...
It's still 0 to 10 volts because that's the rails.
It just ignores it. When it happens, it'll go 0 to... And it'll hold there for a while.
Because when things
go beyond the range that it deals with, it's going to ignore it.
So in our LFO...
It's a virtual 15 volts.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
In our LFO, what determines the speed?
Okay, you have the knob that you have up here, and a control voltage also with an attenuator.
Those are both for speeds because this is a low.
Yeah, and you can see this particular LFO, I think, can go down to like, it's like maybe 30 or 40 seconds per wave. You can see it's hardly moving at all to a sub-audio range.
And it goes between these three here is the way this one works?
All four waveforms are available at the same time.
I see. And why are these two connected?
They're just showing that they're in the same phase.
I see
the phase of the square wave is slightly different.
Okay.
And the ramp wave is. And this is all.
It's more rampy. Oh, I see, because this turns on and off like a square wave, for instance. And that's swelling, and this is ramping. So you're seeing the LED.
Yeah, so for instance, let's get back to this one here.
Okay.
And we'll get that sound.
Yeah.
And we'll plug it into the pitch and so you can hear this. Let's find a nice
something
sound.
That we can act, yeah.
Or actually, what I'll do is I'll just take it into this filter here.
Ah, you go. Yeah, let's talk about the filter. Is this entertaining at all? We're working out.
This is the way to do it.
Okay. Well. What you got there? What's the WMD?
Okay. This is the WMD Micro Hadron Collider.
There you
go. And we're taking this.
This whole thing, not just the black and not just the silver, but that whole thing looks like a broken piece of glass.
Okay, did you bump something?
I bumped something. I bumped this because you were talking.
Oh, okay. So, a lot of these guys are young guys and they love to have funny names for modules. So, for instance, the oscillator we're using is the Piston Han, okay? And it's going into the Micro Hadron Collider, which is a dual multi-mode filter. It's a low pass, a high pass, and a band pass and notch filter, two of them, next to each other that share or can ignore each other's control voltages. So you can make, low passes that go across and high passes that move from each other, things that go together. You can make them parallel or series. You can use them as two separate complete filters entirely.
So what are you using this as?
Right now it's a low pass. So, turn it up a little bit.
I'm
attenuating it down. And I have resonance, which will put a resonant vocal peak on it. To the point where it oscillates.
So you can sort of make wind with this too, huh?
Not unless you want. Yeah, that's rare. But anyway, so you can see. You can control voltage at almost audio rates. And that's with a sine wave. With a ramp wave.
Hey, how can I put that control under my fingertip?
Hey, how can I? No, okay, there we go, turned off.
Okay, good.
So
thanks.
You have these control voltage responses on all these modules, okay? And almost everything here is control voltage. It's most likely not here if it doesn't have some control voltage at some level, okay? This is the oscillator we're using as a fairly complex oscillator, so you can get some fairly complex sounds out of it. Otherwise, we have the other oscillators we have are basic waveform oscillators that produce tones a little easier. So what you can do is you can control different aspects. Like I was controlling that with the sine wave, but I can either control the speed of the sine wave or I can do a direct control here. Oops, wrong one.
Should we keep this up?
Yeah. Let me confine here. There's a frequency control. So there's a frequency input that controls that, and I can take this particular module that we make, and that's why it's so good. It's this responds to pressure. As you press on the pad.
Can I press on the pad? You're doing it.
Yeah. It creates more control voltage that's opening the filter.
Where are we seeing that up here? Is there no lights?
There's no lights for that.
No lights. And there's a scale, though, for that.
Yes, you have range control. Like, I can make it fairly sensitive. or I can make it so I have to.
Push her. So how can we make it stop and then start again by this?
I'm going to get used to you, the way you're doing this.
Yes, you are.
Okay, so right now, it's running all the time, okay, which is kind of annoying. So what you do is you would take the output of the filter, and instead of running it directly out, you run through a voltage-controlled amplifier.
Is that what this is?
Yes.
This 4MS thing?
This is a 16 voltage-controlled oscillators in a matrix.
It's an oscillator?
Amplifier. Amplifiers. And technically, they're called amplifiers, but they should be called voltage-controlled attenuators.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the original things, like the original EMUs and stuff, they would do a little gain. But almost all the ones made now, a full open is unity. So whatever's in comes out. So this is 16 of them, four ins and four outs in a matrix, and you have a VCA at every cross point. So you can
Which is a voltage-controlled amplifier, right?
Yeah,
we got to get that down.
So you can do dynamic mixing of multiple sources at one time if you wanted to. So in this case, what we'll do is we'll take the output of the filter and we'll plug it into the A. And right now, so it's all controlled by this here, and there's a level control here. Now I can replace that level control with... let's say another pressure output here. So now you'll see that light just went off. So when I press the second, so I have control now. Okay, let's get this. Oh, that's right, it's in stereo. I have to turn off the other channel here. So now I have two controls at one with my fingers here.
Can we make this one be? Can we use the gate on this?
Yeah, the type of signals you have are typically control voltages, which are moving linear or logarithmic controls from a certain range, 0 to 10 volts typically, on this sort of system. And then you have event type of controls, which are clocks, gates, triggers. And these are on-off states. They don't have an in-between. It's just full on or full off. And you use those to tell other systems, other modules to actually respond. So, for instance, let me find a decent... this over here we have...
Can't we gate this?
Yes, but...
You're going to do something different?
I'm going to use an envelope.
Let's just go straight.
If I go straight with a gate here.
Yeah, we're going to be dull first.
We'll be dull.
Oh, but can't you do it with the same thing?
Sure.
Sorry. Okay. This is...
Well, yes, okay.
But just to begin. There we go.
Okay.
Now we push this. And it starts.
You can see it's pretty much abrupt. It's like... No, it's just on. So what you have is you have another set of modules, envelope generators, which what they do is they take that gate and you have a control for how long it takes to turn on and how long it takes to turn off. That's a very basic one. It's an AD or an AR for attack and release. Okay. Then you have a kind that has four stages, ADSR. So it starts off the attack time. And then it immediately falls down to a sustained level that stays there as long as the gate is present. And then when you remove the gate, it drops down to zero again. And so depending on what you want to do with it, they can be very percussive, like this guy here, which is the pingable envelope generator, or PEG. You can control this one. You can tap in like a rhythm, and it'll start taking over the rhythm. And then you can take the envelope generator for this, for instance, and let's replace this guy. And you have control over the shape, the dynamic shape. These are all, some of these parameters are also voltage controlled, of course. You can invert it.
So what's causing our gate, actually?
It's internalized. It's got its own. This one can.
That's your tap tempo
tap
on
tempo.
That. I see.
Now, if you want your control over it instead of it controlling, you can take... Sorry. Take an envelope generator. Like
these systems use cables.
Yes. Lots of them.
Eighth inch. Actually, 3.5
millimeter. Yeah, there's a sort of a religious war going on between guys of different formats. Eighth inch is what these guys use. The quarter inch jack guys are the bigger formats and modes and stuff. Then there's Buchla and those guys, which and Surge and Bug Brand and a few that use banana cables. And there's always this thing, well, you can stack bananas. Ooh. And so then this company, Tip Top, came up with a stackable eighth inch. So you can actually has an eighth inch with a jack in the side.
It's offset.
Offset, so you can stack them up to do that. It's kind of stupid because it to me.
Wire or just two wire tip ring sleeve or
just tip ring.
Tip ring.
Yeah, this is all a totally unbalanced system.
What does SimpWorks do? Both?
No, we just are basically like everybody else.
We have our just eighth inch.
Okay.
Yes.
On Bone Gear, there's a combination of two different types of connectors. Most of them are quarter inch, but some of them are tip ring sleeve, and they're designed so that they can be used with external sources or they can be used with expression.
Oh, inserts. Tabs. As inserts?
Not inserts. Oh. So on the Moogs, what they do is any connector that's tip ring sleeve, they put a white circle around it,
oh.
And then you know that it's going to supply 5 volts to go to an expression panel.
Oh. Mm.
But it's wired in such a way that if you just plug in with a quarter inch and you give it a signal, it doesn't care.
Switch check.
Yeah. Okay.
So
cool.
None of these are stereo jacks
for
inserts?
No, not in here.
In. Okay.
Yeah. No.
And some systems like the Buchla, which is one of the more expensive systems around, uses bananas for the control voltage and micro jacks, which are the size smaller, tiny jacks, I guess they're called. They're smaller than the eighth inch that they use for audio. So there's some people make a separation of the two, and some don't.
And you'll be seeing one of those systems on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay, so
ready
now.
Get to be impressed because
yay.
You're talking about $20,000 for one of those.
I'm ready to be impressed right now, actually.
So what I've done here, this envelope generator, this is a quad envelope generator. There's four of them in one panel. It has attack, decay, sustain, and release. So the attack is, once it sees the gate, it starts walking up the attack. And then it reaches full output, then it starts falling down at the decay rate till it reaches a sustain level, which also you have an adjustability. And it'll hold there as long as the gate is present. And then once you let go of the gate, it will fall to zero again. And there's little graphics you can see there. They have showing the different modes underneath.
Oh, yeah, down below. Right,
yeah.
Right.
So
the wiggly lines.
So here, like for instance, I can... So, it gives you the fall off you may want. And if I turn the sustain really low, you'll hear that first pump from the attack and the release, or attack and decay, rather. It's here. Let's move this up a little bit. I'm still providing a decay. So it's holding there. That other thing is the LFO that was still working.
Now we have fun, you see.
Now this particular envelope generator is geared, it's got internal wiring so you can have it cascade itself. So, the first one will, at the end of the first cycle, it will fire the next one, it will fire the next one, and fire the next one. So you can make a fairly complex envelope shape by chaining them together. There's another quad one I have here. And this one has a built-in LFO mode, so it can actually run by itself. It doesn't need to be triggered by anything. It's sort of like the ping generator. So as you can see, those are the sort of basic things to make instrument sounds. Like this, we haven't touched on any modules that you wouldn't find in a preset synthesizer. A typical preset synthesizer would have, this already wired internal, so you wouldn't be able to be flexible about it. If you decided you wanted to have the filter after the VCA instead of in front of the VCA, that sort of stuff. You can't choose on a lot of those to do that. But in this one, it's whatever you want to do with it. And there's a wide variety of these modules. This is just your basic audio. Let's find a simpler, a nicer
okay.
sounding.
Yeah. Can I keep asking questions?
Yeah, sure.
Could you make a percolating rhythmic sound, please?
What do you mean?
Like a loop that goes pop it bop it bop it bop it bop it or
well,
even
yeah.
slower.
Yeah, the using to make okay. So you have control.
To play on top of is what yeah. I'm saying.
The simplest way would be I have this little module down here, which is a little sequence. It's a sequencer module. Okay. What it has is it has two. It's a digital recorder basically, and it has two outputs and output CVs and gates. So I can take the CV. Let's change oscillators because this one. Use the same one. It may not scale very well though.
Does that sequencer also do random?
You can program it randomly, but if you want to do random stuff,
we should take one quick break here, and have Scott come up. You have your sequencer. It's over here. Do you want to describe it, or should we just point and grunt? We can do that. Point and grunt? Could you pull up the Division 6 piece?
Where is it at?
There we go. When we talk about sequencers, this is a powerful, well, I guess you'd call it a powerful puppy.
Okay, what is the sequencer? Okay, since we have control voltages happening that can change pitches, what you have is a device that will spit out a series of pitches
Maybe. Think that won't fall? Here is the fabulous Mattson design.
The camera screen works great. Great idea.
I had to buy a piece of software to make it work.
What?
Yeah, but that's all right. But it also is a screen grab, so when I do like educational things, it'll take all that. So $40.
So basically what the sequencer does is it produces you usually have a bank of knobs like you see on here that you can tune up the notes of a sequence by manually walking between each knob to the next one and tuning whatever pitch you want it to be or whatever filter setting you want it to be or whatever LFO speed, whatever controllable event you want to have happen. And then you provide a clock and it'll automatically walk through those things over and over again. So you get your standard sort of baselines, you know, that sort of stuff.
Oh, look. Yeah. It lives. How come it's not being picked up?
That's probably just the right color that your sensor
I think it was just booting up there. I'm not sure why we have a cursor, but, you know, I think we'll live with it. That's very interesting how the camera doesn't really...
There's different colors that the camera doesn't like. So sequencers became an important part at the beginning because that was how you got your automatic, your left-hand baseline stuff. You know, it was all done with sequencers, and all the original synth pop music is dominated.
Let's do that. And there's another sequencer just because we're SynthWorks. We have one, too, that is actually four that actually you can hit. And these are the control voltages.
Primarily, there's another way. You can see from the way I've been dealing with this that the presets are not part of the idiom. You know, the only way you have a preset or a remember a patch when you're doing this is you take a picture. you work out your own system to draw things up. Because you're not going to, there's no standardized flowchart diagrams. So it used to be when I taught electronic music back in college days, there was a sort of a standardized thing at the time where you used to draw, you know, VCAs and VCFs and all that sort of stuff. But that's all arcane, you know, scratchings of the cave wall. So.
But on this one, we have these are your different sets, right?
So these are programmers. Basically, a programmer is a manual sequencer in that I can have four sets of control voltages and manually choose them by pushing the button. So I can have one set control offset to transpose it. So I can have verse chorus effects. You know, I can change four parameters radically, you know, at any one. Well, basically that's what this is too. It's three of them, you know, but it's walking through them automatically. Now there's a mode you can manually address each stack on this, right? I mean, I forget. I actually had one of these for a while. And it was just too much for me to work with, actually, at the time.
But it'll do randoms and things, like he was asking?
Yeah.
You can't, like,
absolutely specify stage 8, but I mean, that's got.
This can be 16.
Forward,
do one roll
or backwards.
So it can do 16 steps.
Yeah, or ping pong, or bounces back and forth.
Oh, look. That's very cool.
Or if you just want random, just set a bunch of different voltages and hit that, and now it's random. And yeah, like I said, 8 or 16 stages.
And so you can take a single output for this, right? And it's going to make a pitch change?
Why are there three rows of knobs, but there's one row of lights?
Because those three are addressed at a time.
Okay, stack. So the lights address, look at one row at a time?
At column.
One column.
Oh, one. Each LED is one column.
Yeah. Right.
Well, this might make it easier for you. Think of it like a counter, because that's what it is. There's a counter in there that's counting from 1 to 8, and depending on which chip he uses, most of them have another pin where you can control, is it going to count up or is it going to count down?
Well, okay, that light that's on right now, how do I know which row it's in that column? 14.
Okay, this is an odd one in that you can make 16 steps on this by doing first row number 1 and then row number 2.
Yeah, the numbers at the top say 1 through 8, the numbers at the bottom say 9 through 16.
And the color of
the
color of the LED change.
17 through 24, right?
In this one it doesn't do that. You can't
watch the bottom row.
Okay, so there's two things going on. If you're in 8-channel mode, then there's different outputs. Like this row goes out output A, and this bottom row goes out output B, and that happens at the same time. So right now we got this one selected. So this knob is going out A, this knob is going out B, and this is kind of like an extra bonus row that goes out another output. But there's also 16 channel mode, but what it's hard to tell from the video is the LED changes colors in this mode. So
they can actually look at it in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it's green, it's 1 through 8. When it's red, it's 9 through 16.
Yellow.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I got some muted here. Red means mute. If you turn them all the way up, it mute. Okay.
Oh, I see.
That's what you couldn't figure out.
Yeah. So green, make sound, yellow, yeah. Green,
thank
yellow.
You.
It's going between the different rows.
Make sound come out.
Well, okay.
Doody do do ba ba ba.
Okay, so this, well, let's try it. This will be fun since I am not used to this one. We'll just take this, plug it into.
Does the smoke come out? No.
I
that's
hope
good.
Not.
Yeah. Gray smoke or red or green?
It'll be yellow smoke, actually.
That's about which bus
you're on. Gate out goes over here to the gate in.
Plug in
unfortunately, your punchline was stepped on. And which are we on the top or the bottom right
the
now?
Top row.
Top row. So if we turn these, you're changing things at the same time, aren't you?
I just changed the length.
So this is the sort of what I was asking for. So that's going to be lower frequency because I'm getting it down.
Yeah.
Just
go ahead.
Oh, just to give you an idea. So like right now we're on 1. So if I turn this knob, then that changes the pitch. Now we're on number 2 knob, and so that kind of shows that when you're running, it's going between the different knobs.
And it can be two different, so this could be pitch, or it could be a
okay.
filter
here,
down
we'll,
here.
Actually, we'll take the B out.
The B out, yes.
B out. And we'll run the filter with the B out. So
is this really the filter?
Yeah. You just hear it. See that one? It got a little brighter. Have dramatic differences.
Yes.
Of course, let me choose.
Cool. Okay. Now we're going to shift. Brad, you're on the camera. I'm going to give you a guitar. This is going to be my background.
Oh.
Or are we going to shift to Christian? We're going to shift to Christian.
No.
No? Let's shift to me.
We don't have the cables to do Christians. Yeah.
Okay, we'll just do mine. We'll just do guitar.
Let me stop this for a second here.
Do you know how to?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Oh, the run. Here we go.
Okay.
Steve, you're 15 minutes out from your Skype.
I know. Okay. I know. That's why I'm moving things right along.
Okay.
There's a specific moving. Brad, this is yours.
All right.
I'm going to... What James had told me when we were working this out is that one of the things that AES people would like is the fact that we can modify existing sounds. So
it's as you can see, to make a complex thing, you gotta remember this is sort of like Wendy Carlos switched on Bach, okay? Every single note, every single chord in that recording was done one note at a time. You know, it was re-recorded like every hundreds of times. Because these instruments, to get them to play more than one notes at one time, is a lot of expense and a lot of hassle. You know, tune them together and stuff like that.
So I'm making sound, I think.
Yes, you are. Let me, so he's running right now into an audio.
I don't want to see that fall off the top of there. It's very, very scary. Oh, I guess it's not just cut off from here.
Well, I can see lights happening, so I know you're coming through. So let me see if I can pop you into another channel here.
This counts as playing. So 2-to-1 rule is still in effect.
Okay, I'm going to. Well, here you are normal. Let's just take a normal out first.
Here I am normal. Doesn't happen very often. So, of course, it's already sort of messy because.
Yeah, later on you can give me a clean sound.
There.
Okay, so to get things happening in the synthesizer, these are typically the audio signals are plus or minus 5 volts or plus from 0 to 10 volts. So you're going to have to boost things up a whole bunch to get them to actually play in here. And also, when it comes out, you better attenuate like crazy because it's going to blow things up. So this is a preamp module, and it also has an envelope follower. So his amplitude is turning the control voltage.
But this is just
right now
modified.
Right now, you're not doing anything with it. No, it's really basic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take another output of his. This is a very classic thing to do.
I'm still very. Scott, could you like hold your gear back behind there? Just, I see a wiggle.
I'll make another one.
I've just patched in a ring modulator.
Now we're sounding like high school.
So we'll put the ring modulator in one channel and the regular in the other. Then we'll take his amplitude and we'll pitch that. Very raw. So what a remodulator does is it has an A input and a B input, this oscillator. And it produces the sum and differences of those two signals. So you get A plus B and A minus B, and all the harmonics of the same thing. All the harmonics of B plus all the harmonics of B all the way up. So you get this very metallic feel. So it's usually used for making gongs and metallic sounds. Now there is an interesting, you people who know math can go, well, what if I do A and B being the same thing? Well, if A and B are the same thing, you get A plus A and A minus A. So you get an octave up. A dirty octave. Oh, except here. Wrong one. Yeah, because you shouldn't be getting that pitch kind of thing. I placed the wrong one.
Sort of fun. Can you dance to it?
No, you can't.
Is it rock and roll?
Oh, it's because of your distortion. That's what's
happening. It's because of my distortion.
Why don't you play
clean
through it so we can hear what
Everyone keeps asking me that.
So we can hear what your guitar actually sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
They keep asking me that.
Okay, that's now right. We come to another
but I want
to, important part.
Actually, that's not, just for the time being.
And that's the use of a multiple. Basically, a multiple is a Y chord, and I have to patch in a multiple if I want to get his original sound also. So what I have to do is patch in his original sound, so here is there. That's his original sound.
And Division 6 makes multiples, as I recall.
Yes.
And we could. Sure, I'll give you a little thing.
That should give you. One should be an octave, kind of. There's some things that go wrong with the formula. It's not a very clean formula. It's not like a Bode frequency shifter or those sort of modules, which are actually doing multiples, chains of ring modulators. And the original ring modulator, this I think is also because this is an AC coupled ring modulator, so it's doing a few things that are fine tuned.
Hey, James, you were telling me there's an echo thing that you have available. Just moving
things
along.
Up in fast. Okay. Our last NAM, one of the winners of the show was this module I'm about to plug in, which is Epiphone. No, this is an actual digital. This is made in conjunction with the gentleman who made SoundHack, the software SoundHack. It not only does it do echoing, but it also does pitch shifting echoes.
Sounds like you got a hole where you can put alcohol in it.
Yeah, you can see each echo is lowering in pitch.
Okay, that was the idea. You can really mess with stuff.
Of course, all these parameters are voltage controlled, so I can have his echoes change at an LFO rate. You get out of control pretty quickly.
Okay.
Okay.
This section, since Christian's going to actually show KMI, we might be close to done, unless there are any, unless you have something else. It's right there.
I just wanted to say that also in this particular sort of thing, you can also get modules. There's so many different kinds of modules being made, and people are trying to be experimental as possible. I have this module here as a perfect example. It's a wave player module. Let me fill some of this stuff here.
Can you cascade those sequencers to get longer sequences?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, for all the gate and the clock and all that stuff, there's like pass-throughs. So just kind of a whole bunch of them.
So this is a wave player that actually plays wave files, .wav files. And they're all in this little card, an SD card, and I can have 72 of them. And I have voltage control over the pitch. I have voltage control over the start and stop points. So let me find it.
It's called the outer limits control set. We control the vertical.
You can see it. I have. Back to the beginning because I know that there's a drum. Unfortunately, you can't, on this particular module, you can't easily address the sound. So you can choose the start and stop point of the loop. And this is controlled by, you can use control voltage to do this too. So that's sort of the sort of things that you can do modifying sounds. You can make your own track, put it on the thing, and then play with that sound.
CV to change what you're playing?
Yes, you can choose the loop via CD or gate. You can choose the start and end places of the loop, and you can choose the sample rate.
So there must be more than one CV input then.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can see that there's this full...
All the different...
All those tracks on the side. So, but that's... And you can see I made these iPhone modules because I actually like to play with loops and use loops and modify existing stuff. You know, get very complicated stuff and play with it a lot. Because to make music takes almost one of these cases as a voice. You know, standard voice, two oscillators, a filter, VCA, envelope generators. That's what you need for a voice. So you're talking about probably $800 right there, depending on how cheap you want to get with oscillators and stuff.
That's analog or digital?
Analog.
Oh, it's got digital in it.
Yeah, this is this digital module. I think it's like $350 for that one. These oscillators here are like I think they're like 125, something like that.
Do they offer these in kits?
Yes, there's some 4MS makes kits for a lot of things, but not very many people do because everyone's on SMT doing SMD stuff. So you know it's
Lance.
From the kits or SMT?
Oh,
just a quick question. I was just curious, like, what do you think the price tag is for this system?
You can think that each one of those boxes, if you bought them new. Which I have not bought any of these modules new.
He's now admitting to stealing every single piece.
I bought the used market is very, very fast on these. But you'd think that probably each one of these boxes are about $2,000, maybe, depending on what's on them.
And the phone tech you've got attached there, what's going on with those?
Those are ones I made because I like to play with the. So it's just an iPhone dock in a module that turns the line output into jacks. And it runs off the 12-volt supply of the units through, like, a car adapter.
You mean marketing that eventually? Is that something?
Well, no. Unfortunately, you have to have the dock, and the docks are not cheap.
But you can make a kit, and people can provide
their
own docks
the
if they have their kits.
The preamps. Actually, these need preamps, and I don't have them in there yet. But
so all of the conceivable modules are already out there? Is there anything?
Oh, no. There's no way there's all. All your basic modules are covered. You know, oscillators. Probably no one's going to make a new oscillator. But yeah, there's wacko stuff. I mean, there's voltage controlled FM radios. You know, I mean, seriously, there's the guys who make this wavetable model. He makes a voltage controlled FM radio.
And the video stuff.
And there's video synthesizers. Yeah, which are all in the same format that all run video at video frequencies and can use these controllers to control them to do abstract video. Yeah, it's exploding. I mean, there's a place called modulargrid.net, and you can choose a cabinet and then choose the modules you want, and it will tell you the current ratings, what you need of a power supply to run those modules. It'll give you the price of the modules. It'll add them all up and all that jazz. Then you can do module Tetris, you know, where you move
so
it, which
close
is something
the,
you do a lot. Right?
We're going to close that.
So these are, so Skype. This is Eurorack?
Eurorack is what they call the form.
That's cool. Just clip that shut.
Is it just power on the type plane?
Yeah.
There's a bus board with headers on it, and the headers contain a plus 12 and a minus 12, a plus 5 voltage, a ground, and a CV bus and a gate bus, but hardly anybody uses those two buses.
I thought that there wasn't a standard as far as power, but there is
now. In Eurorack, there is 12 volts.
Plus and minus 12
plus
volts.
Minus 12 volts.
Plus minus 12, plus 5.
And optional plus 5.
Optional. Most everyone, if they need plus 5, they pull it from the 5. Because, like, for Dover doesn't have a 5-volt supply in there, even though they created the bus. They make a little adapter that you plug in that takes the 12 and turns it into 5 and shoves it down the 5-volt. But there's hardly any modules that use those that don't supply the internal.
Is the power supply the full thing, or is that something you supply?
Well, this... The case thing is a bone of contention. I mean, one of these empty cases is about $500, and there's a bunch of companies that make cases now where they didn't, and you can build your own. Like I built these cases, you know, the metalwork I bought from Online Metals, which is right on the other side of the Ballard Bridge. You know, you just order it to size. The rail system is a standard vector rail, which you can buy online from Mauser, places like that, and so. You know, it's pretty simple, and this one is using tip-top power supply, which is a little switching power supply, and it has flying bus ports, which are ribbon cables.
Oh, was that made just for these? That power supply just made, is that
basically? Yeah, there's a couple like that. I have a Flight of Harmony power supply, that's in this one. And also they make a thing called a Happy Ending Kit, which is a little rack case and a power supply and a bus.
Okay, James, we're going to shift.
Yes.
And Christian, you're going to come after this. You're going to be part of the in-the-box instead of the out-of-the-box thing, since we're not using your CV. And we are going to go now to, hopefully it works. It might go beep, beep. It might be loud.
Ready.
There you go. Ooh. Daniel.
And he's going to be where?
Vancouver. Daniel. Greetings.
How do you do?
Well, we're good, except that you're not seen. Turn your camera on, please.
It has some drivers.
Okay. Now, so.
Vancouver, BC?
BC, yes. Correct.
BC Indian.
Yep. Yes, you will. Not sending video, not receiving video.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Skype's open on filter, man. Just a second here.
Okay, no worries. So, Daniel is with the company called IntelliGel. And they're one of he's one of the companies that sort of knocks me out for how much he does. While we're waiting for that, we can go here in your IntelliGel, I think, IntelliGel, right? And I'm showing your website now, Daniel, while you're getting that taken care of. So his, oh, goodbye. Oh, well, he'll come back. See this? This is one guy that makes these things, and I don't know how. I just don't get it. So I wanted to ask him, how do we do this? And so we're going to try this again. Ah, yes, I see you. You're fine. Let's go. Let's like that. Yay! Greetings.
Greetings.
Now, you see me, but you don't. Look at this silly thing.
We see him.
Let's hang up for a second.
Okay.
Because this, my computer's trying to be helpful. You stop. I'll video call you. Here we go. Now I'm going to, yay. And you're visual. So it looks like it's just me, but it's not. There's a whole room of people out there. See, you could really goof on somebody well this way. Here, I'll show. There's the room of people. They're waving, actually. Okay, and we've just had a great time going through James's rig with a little video. And look at all those things. Now they know what these do. Daniel, greetings and thank you for being with us today. Can you hear everything okay?
Definitely. I'm pleasure to be here.
Excellent.
You can hear me?
Yeah, yeah. What module are you going through to make that effect? You're gapping, that's all, just a little bit. So I was just showed them your website for a second about how many modules you have and come out with. How long have you been in business?
Coming up to 4 years now.
4 years. How many products do you have?
I've lost count. It's about 28.
An uncountable infinity of products from IntelliGel. And you even have a whole line of discontinued items as well, right?
Yeah, so in that tally, some are because there's version 2s of things, so it's not, and there's some modules that are extremely basic, so, but within there, there's a broad range of things that we've developed.
Is everything in your rig right now, or do you have any that you can just pick up and show us up to the camera?
Let's see if this is...
Oh, you can move the camera. So one of the things that blows me away about your products, if we can get it in focus, is how narrow so much things can be. Like, do you have, what's your buffered malt or something?
Yeah, so let's see. I'm holding my laptop here while trying to...
Yeah, challenging, isn't it?
There you go. That one is the smallest, that's 2HP.
2HP, so, now can you explain HP for us just real quick?
Yeah, HP is approximately 5 millimeters.
And it stands for hole placement, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And it's, the URAC standard comes from something to do with, medical or scientific equipment that is racked up. And that's the, I think Dofer's original modules, he's the guy who sort of pioneered this format. He was using sort of pre-existing frameworks from that technology.
Okay, cool.
So I started out like as somebody who's just a fan of modulars and with a tight budget, and cases are something that are usually pretty expensive. And so for me, and for a lot of people, this is considered like real estate. And the more you can get out of a small space, the better. So I started off by making really, really tiny modules to try to get the most out of the limited space that I had.
So do you stack up the circuit boards? Is that how they fit?
Yeah. Do I have one I can grab here? This one is not like that.
As a circuit board designer, when I see these things, I would have said no.
Yeah.
But okay, but that's cool. So can you describe a few of your products then that you'd like to tell
sure.
us about
well,
your product line?
I mean, it's no mystery that at this point we're trying to cover, or at some point try to cover everything to do with synthesis that we can. So we have digital modules, we have analog modules, microcontroller-based things, hybrids, all that stuff. And what we're trying to sort of base everything around the what you would consider core for analog synthesis. So really solid oscillators, really solid filters, and within those we might have a variety. So some of our
we'll see if this will work actually, because we have
our most successful modules would be things like
the Bluro Vision.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Does this work? Can you guys see anything at all through this?
It takes a while. It has to be stable to actually come into focus, is all.
Okay. So it may be hard to see here. This is a pretty humble-looking oscillator. It's only about 30 millimeters wide, but there's quite a lot of technology that went into this. It's a triangle core oscillator, and this was made with the analog designer that we work with a lot. His name's David Dixon. And the big thing about this is, and with any oscillator, is that in the analog, it's really difficult to come up with a way for an oscillator to track over many octaves, so that when you're controlling it, it's producing the pitch that you would want it to produce.
What's it called?
It's the Dixie.
The Dixie, because I can pull it up on
there's
what?
Dixie 2 in the middle.
Dixie 2?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Here we go. Because I can pull it up like this. You can just set that down. So we're seeing it over on this side, your website. Brilliant. Now you can describe it. We can see it.
Okay. So, with things like this, it's how it functions that's the most important to us. So something like an oscillator, it's supposed to do things properly. And that sounds like not a lot to be asking or demanding, but it's actually pretty rare in the analog world. So other things like all the wave shapes, we've tried to get as perfect as possible, sine waves with as little distortion, and just those basics. So something like that, then if it grew into, so you can see it is.
Give me the name and I'll just go to it on your website.
The Rubicon.
The Rubicon.
Yeah, so
okay.
This is our...
So everybody see, there it is.
Flagship analog oscillator. And so this is based on the same sort of core technology as the Dixie, but we have things like through zero FM modulation, and a lot more things that you can sort of control and alter in the core. So those are our two main analog sound sources. Then we've done quite a few different filters.
Okay, you want to name one?
Dr. Octature.
Dr.
Octature.
It's right at the top left here. Yes, we see it now.
See with the sine waves on the LEDs?
Oh yes, wow, look at that. That's actually, we'll go back to the picture because that's pretty exciting. One moment.
Okay.
Now, blinky lights we can see.
Yeah. There's okay, good.
Wow, cool.
So this is just a low-pass filter, but it's based on the same sort of architecture as a cascaded OTA filter like you would...
What's an OTA filter?
Operational transductance amplifier.
I knew that, of course, but... Yes, go ahead. Oh, it looks like you're frozen. The joy of telepresence. So, you know, what's cool, though, is this is almost all we need because you're going to be with us for probably close... Can you hear me all right? You're going to be with us for close to an hour on Saturday. All right? So we're actually going to be able to go into a lot of this stuff in detail because this is sort of the opener. This is the teaser for you to come out on Saturday.
Yeah,
Is he going to be?
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty difficult to kind of show like what's going on here. And I don't want to go into too much detail because it's probably pretty boring. So,
no.
I could just, do you want to just hear some stuff?
Sure. Shall we?
Or do you want to ask some questions? Or?
No, the thing is, we're a little bit behind, is all.
Okay.
Yeah, but why don't you play something?
Well, if you can see at the top, these blinking lights, this is the new sequencer that we're about to start shipping. And this I've been working on for 2 years. So, see how loud this is. So it's a pretty unique kind of architecture, or not architecture in this case, I guess, sort of the approach to how the sequence works. You have 8 different stages, and each stage has 4 different modes it can be in. It can either be a ref, it can be a single note, it can be a repeating note, or it can be a held note. And the length of time that it behaves in that depends on a pulse count multiplier bug. So there's an 8 position switch and this is the 4 position switch. So for example, on stage 1, I have it in single hit mode and I have the pulse count to 1. So whenever the clock advances, the sequencer advances to this stage, the clock pulse will pulse for 1 pulse count and then move on to the next stage. If I put this to 3, it would pulse for 1 pulse and then would rest for 2. Are you guys stuck? Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
And so like if I go to the next one here, it's a held note, and I put it to 2, it would hold for 2. So you could build up this kind of a interesting rhythmic structure this way. Have some things that are repeating. I've got a heavy swing on it, so I'm going to turn that off. And all the pitches are set up here. Let's turn these down. And they're all quantized. So you can, in the main area here, you can pick a scale that you're going to be quantizing to. You can pick how many stages are in the sequence, or how many pulse counts the sequence would be in, like, so that you can sort of have it resolve to a certain number of beats, just like 4 times. And then there's different modes for the direction of the sequencer and how it behaves, like random modes and drunken walk, etc. Swing, and there's these aux inputs for doing things like the externally transposing the sequence, key shift, root note shift, gate length, stage length, a bunch of other things. So, also each step you can activate a slide, or you can double click it to have it skip that stage completely.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Okay.
I did the right thing to get you involved, and I'm really excited to go into some of these things more in depth on Saturday.
Okay.
And I think that my timing for Saturday, when did we say? Did we say like 3-ish or something?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Okay, so the band's going to be here at 2, basically 2 to 3, and then we'll just have some time with you, 3 to 4-ish.
Okay, sounds good.
So great. Well, I should have a mirror here so that you can hear everyone's joyful applause. There you go. That's fabulous. Thank you, Daniel, and we'll see you in a couple days.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good meeting.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye. So wasn't that fun? Now, in the same way. Pardon me?
What an insane module.
I know, it's brilliant. Here's one more thing. We'll take this to the break, and then we'll start with Christian and go. Okay? Yes, sir.
There was something on there that said SCIF friendly.
Yeah, that means it's flat. If a SCIF is one of these things.
Buchla called the module trays that it put things in, they call it boats. And a SCIF is a small boat. And so all these desktop smaller things like this are referred to as SCIFs. Okay. And there's a couple of manufacturers to make them. That was the thing that changed almost everybody from making things into service mode, because there was a demand to have these scales.
Our first product was this deep.
Yeah.
It was circa 1986 in 1999.
Yeah, there was a big backlash against SMD technology at first, but now the like he was talking about the HP width. This is a 84 HP across the standard size for these things. And so everybody's trying to make these super skinny modules. Like this one here is a 2 HP buffer that Scott makes.
Right.
You know, so it's like, yeah, that's about the width of the jack.
Okay, so where we're going to go now is with Mickey Delp, who couldn't be here tonight because he has a show, but he's going to be here, he's going to be another one of our telepresent guests on Saturday. And when I saw this, it sort of knocked me out. And it's cool that we're sort of in sequencer mode because this was the most unique sequencer idea I'd seen. But James is saying, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. But
there's a big movement to break out drum machines.
Hold on a second. Should say, you're right, though.
Yeah.
That's important. Is the other thing that Mickey does is he makes this drum machine that has, you put a pulse into it, and it outputs like an 808 type sound, like a hand clap,
a
close hi hat.
AS makes a bunch. To break out the components of a drum machine into a snare drum module, a kick drum module, blah, blah, blah. And then these guys with crazy logic modules that are making all the drum, the actual patterns to drive them.
And that's what brings us to Mickey Delp's Trigger Man sequencer module preview. Volume, I think we may have a, hopefully it'll be good. Hopefully I'll have actually something streaming. Please. There we go. Rock.
This is a preview of a new trigger sequencer from Delptronics that debuted at NAMM 2013. It's a very compact 8 HP wide. There are 8 trigger outputs, and each pattern consists of 8 steps per output. Also has 8 patterned memories, which we'll look at later. The revolutionary thing about this sequencer is that all the functions are controlled with just 2 knobs. Through our pattern analysis research, we realized that there are fewer unique patterns than you might think. Most patterns are just shifted versions of other patterns. For instance, this pattern of 1 beat, 1 rest, 1 beat doesn't change when you shift it. It just starts at a different point. So every possible pattern can be selected with the shift knob and the complexity knob. As I turn the complexity knob, the pattern gets more complex. The more I turn it up, the more steps are added until we go to all steps on. The output is selected by pressing on the 2 knobs, which moves the indicator up and down. I've got the sequencer connected to the Delptronics LDB1E analog drum module. 3 of the trigger outputs are connected to the bass, snare, and hi-hat. Let's add some snare drum to our pattern. Give us a couple of beats. Now, listen as I turn the shift knob, that beat really changes when we shift the snare position around. I'll add some hi-hats. The mode button. That puts us in a more traditional step sequencer mode where I can turn specific steps on and off. I get a blinking cursor that is moved with this knob. Pressing the knob toggles the step on or off. And I can always switch back to the algorithmic mode and change the shifting complexity. Those are the 2 edit modes. There's a 3rd mode wherein I can play any of the 8 stored patterns. So I can select a pattern and then change which pattern is playing by turning the shift knob. There's a blinking cursor in this mode as well, and when I select a pattern and click the knob, it's added to a pattern chain. The 2 selected patterns play one after another repeatedly. I can even select the same pattern more than once. So now it plays pattern 1 twice, then pattern 2, and then repeats. It You can add up to 100 patterns in a chain, and it remembers the chain even with the power off. Of course, the 8 patterns themselves are also remembered without power. Let's patch one of the outputs into the clock input on a sequencer. We'll select that output and edit the pattern. This is modular, so the outputs can trigger anything from sequencers, envelopes. You can even use one of the outputs as an input into another with these trigger sequencers for seriously complex rhythms. It's coming soon from Delptronics. Watch our website, Facebook page for updates. Thanks.
And, yeah, is that cool or what? And it is now available. $195. So,
how much?
$195.
That's madness.
But lots or little?
Huh?
Too much or too little?
No, too little.
He'll be happy to hear that.
Well, the thing that he was doing with the sequencer, driving a sequencer, that's where the complexity of these sort of things can really extrapolate on farther. Say you've loaded in a 8-note sequencer, but you're playing it with 3 gate signals, you know, in a pattern. Well, you get 24 loops before it repeats itself. You know, that's the sort of stuff that you can do by chaining these odd number patterns and odd number note sequences together or apart from each other. You can do a lot of very, very complex interactive stuff.
Okay, now we've jam-packed things in here. Christian's going to come back after our break. We're going to take a break of 10. We're going to make it real quick, 10 minutes. And we've got cookies and water over here. And when we come back, we'll do a real quick giveaway of our 3 prizes for the evening. But they're fabulous prizes. And how's it gone so far?
Very good.
Excellent. Enjoy.
Hey, Scott, I'm going to take this off of here so that
okay.
I'm not scared. Thank
you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like there.
All right.
I was getting plenty of level, but that's okay. Better.
All right. Cool.